Welcome everybody to the first of the 2013 Global China Partners Summit presentations by our good friend Dr. Joe Webb. May I first of all say thank you to Debbie Korn for providing the Printerverse location with this wonderful auditorium of people and the fact that we're now being videoed live on the internet for global distribution after the event. Joe Webb's a good friend of mine, has been for many years. They call him Dr. Doom because of his pronunciations on the state of our industry. But I think one day he might become less Dr. Doom, more maybe Dr. Gloom, but maybe one day Dr. Boom when this industry revives and we are all back to where we were 10 years ago. And that's the future of print. So Joe is going to talk to us about the state of the channel. And so without any further comment from myself, may I say, Dr. Joe, please take the floor and give us your presentation. And thanks very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, everyone. The topic is State of the Channel 2013, but State of the Channel is basically a jumping off point. It doesn't matter really where we are, it's where we have to be that's the most important thing. It's not always what kind of business conditions you are in, it's what you're going to do within those business conditions with the resources that you have. On the channel side, which is the way that we've moved goods from manufacturers to printing companies and others associated with imaging, it's actually the least flexible part of the marketing mix. If you remember your marketing mix of the four P's, product, price, promotion, and then place, which is where channels are, channels should be rather flexible, but over the years, they have always had a lot of legal agreements in them that tie them up and make it difficult very often for manufacturers and for dealers to change allegiances or to change their product mixes or carry new products or move into new areas without coming into some kind of tension within many of those pre-existing agreements. All that is fine, and those legal agreements are there for a purpose, but one of the things that it does is creates new opportunities for competition with businesses and technologies who are not tied up by those kinds of agreements. So some of the examples that I have are the newsstand and the post office and something called Tower Records. Many of you may remember Tower Records, which was the biggest distributor of CDs and music for extremely long periods of time. And now we see that they're competing against Amazon, Facebook. We don't think of Facebook as a competitor to the Postal Service, and I know for certain the Postal Service doesn't consider Facebook as a competitor, but they are. And also iTunes and Amazon MP3 and other forms of digital music eliminated the need in the marketplace for something like a Tower Records. So the question is, what will the marketplace be like with all of these tools and the different kinds of things that you can bring to the market to move goods from place to place, and what happens when many of those goods and services are actually digital themselves? We still will need dealers because print businesses have specific locations and specific geographies for certain reasons, whatever they might be. But the dealers have to be very, very flexible in meeting those markets. There was a big move a few years ago for many of the dealers to start selling direct to large printing companies. And the reason for that was not just the idea that they were trying to capture more margin, which they actually didn't, but it was more that they had lots of information about their consumers all of a sudden that they were able to gather, where in the past dealers were very important because there was great uncertainty, meaning a lack of knowledge about where all those 40 or 50,000 printing locations were, what they were using at a certain time, what kinds of things that they needed. But as databases and as experience in the marketplace grew and as product lines started to be trimmed down, that kind of information lack was replaced. So there was less of a need for many of the dealers, except for the dealers, of course, who were creative about what they did. Now we're looking at a situation where we need dealers, but we're not exactly certain what the role of that dealer should be. In terms of what the distribution channel needs to have for the future, is to have much lower fixed costs, not in terms of fixed costs of we're doing things cheaply or we cut back our costs as much as we had. It's that the whole idea of operations has to be based on some kind of flexibility. And it's not necessarily a fixed cost in terms of a building, but it's an infrastructure that allows them to do that. It's more of a virtual infrastructure where you give people who are working in the field and whether they be technical people or salespeople or even customers, access to information and people for either training, or to place orders, for order status, for ways of moving those goods, finding where they might be in a supply chain, where you don't need a lot of infrastructure of offices and the like. It's a very connected organization because of all the different devices that we can access information about, such as working on a press room floor and communicating information about the kinds of products that are being used over smartphones and tablets and the like directly to the dealer, but also being monitored by the management of that particular company and also monitored by many of the vendors who will be selling through that particular dealer. Just because you have information doesn't mean that information is knowledge, right? Information can exist whether it's good or bad. Knowledge means that there's some kind of organization to it, but wisdom is far different. Wisdom means that you have an understanding of the application of the information or the knowledge that others don't have. And that's where a lot of dealer experience has always been, because they've always helped their clients determine the kinds of products that they should have, what was the right product or right vendor for them, and also the wisdom going forward, the different kinds of things that can be produced. Because I think we need something slightly different now. With the decline of traditional print, printers are also looking for new product areas that they can start getting into that would help them replace a traditional print that has been lost to that organization, but they want to start doing other things, but they don't have the information about the products or the applications or the users or the marketplace, and dealers can be a very good conduit for that. Always in history, the dealer channels that exist within an industry are reflections of their customers and reflections of their customers and the vendors who serve them. And this has never really changed. The dealer channels have always been there, as I put it more in terms of a wedding commitment here, in good and bad and sickness and health. They're always changing, but the relationships are always there and the need for them is always there. Now, this particular chart should be quite disturbing, but I find it already is quite disturbing. Let me interpret for those of you who may have trouble seeing it here. The top line is the producer price index for the Postal Service. Now, some of you came here and saying, I didn't know he was going to talk about economics. Well, surely, I'm not talking about economics. I'm talking about the Postal Service. There's nothing economic about it. The top line, then, is the producer price index. Now, the Postal Service claims that their prices are being set on the basis of the consumer price index. But that's just for first-class mail. The producer price index includes all the other rates that they have. So you see that this has been growing rather significantly. The next line down is the producer price index for commercial printing. They see that distribution of print has been costing more than the actual production of print in terms of the change in the prices. This is the way it plays out. A customer has a budget for a particular print job, and then they say, this is what we need, this is what we have to spend. So as postal rates change, those rates go up at a rate faster than general inflation or faster than the rate of printing, and they crowd out the prices that printers can get for that. That's not the real problem on this slide. The real problem on this slide are the two lines at the bottom. Those are the producer price indexes for wireless communications and computers. So if the Postal Service keeps saying that their prices are going up by the cost of the CPI, and that's fine because of the rate of general inflation, it doesn't take into account at all the alternatives of digital media and the way that is produced. So you have this gap widening and widening and widening on a regular basis between the cost of distributing hard copy goods and transmitting that information over digital media. What does that have to do with dealers? Well, it has a lot to do with dealers because it reduces the general volume of printing which means that the dealers are in the same position that the printers are in. Remember, we're wed to them in sickness and health and that whole bit. So somebody has to figure something out. How do we change that? How do we replace that volume with other kinds of revenue or other ways of doing things? Here's another disturbing slide for you. This is the per capita consumption of commercial printing in the U.S. And you see that it has been on a rather steady decline. And it's one thing that a lot of folks will look at economic data and they won't adjust it for inflation. The other thing they never adjusted for is population. And that's what's happening here. So you see the average consumption looks like it's going down to around $190 per person, where it was rather significant in the $500 range for many, many years on this chart. So the marketplace is changing rather dramatically. So what are the dealer channel's advantages in this kind of marketplace? Well, the first thing is that proximity matters. The location of the dealer, the ability to reach out to clients on behalf of vendors or product areas is still extremely important. You can't do everything online. When something is physically broken on a press or something is a product is needed to make a certain device work, it has to get there somehow. The other thing is something I call on-site insight. Vendors can't be everywhere. And even though they may want to, they need somebody there to know exactly what is going on in that particular business, in that particular situation, in that particular department. So they always have a way of doing that if they are there, if they are being good, responsible members of that channel. An advantage that the dealers have is that they can be many things to few people. What I mean there is that they can represent large amounts of different kinds of product lines and be bringing them to individual locations. We used to refer to this very often as in some ways breaking bulk. Material goods would go into a warehouse and then get split up among different users. That's the whole process of distribution chains. But it's also the whole idea of representation as well. And then what I call opportunistic specialization. When something is new on the marketplace and you need to find out where that can go, the dealers can also be very, very good partners in that kind of situation. An example might be 3D printing. Now, 3D printing really isn't printing, but it is an area that that many print organizations are looking at. There's been some good examples these past few weeks of some UPS stores experimenting with 3D printing, and they're actually supplying parts for auto enthusiasts who are looking for parts to be created so they can put them on some of their restored vehicles. And the sites that are doing this, there's very few of them right now, are doing extremely, extremely well. That's the kind of thing where a dealer takes initiative and say, I'm going to look for this product line, I'm going to bring it into our organization, and we're going to see what this might do for us and for our customers. Now, when I say our organization, doesn't necessarily mean that it's a very big dealer. It could be two or three people who actually have the dealership agreements and doing that. And those are the businesses that I think have the greatest opportunity for productivity, for using a lot of the new tools and getting more involved in a lot of these different products. The challenges are anything that's done strictly in software production, such as digital media, software-based output, web pages, some kind of social media and the like, have not really been part of anything that dealers have other than the ability to sell them servers and various graphic tools that they may have connected to their production equipment. But it's not anything that they have on an ongoing basis. So that is a problem. Another issue related to that is that what I call electrons work all day and they don't file expense reports. A lot more things that are being done in marketing are done through many of these kinds of digital media, and dealers often are not in a position to offer personal representation at the time that occurs, because if they're not available physically at a particular time, many times clients or prospects will go looking for other things online and find another way of doing it. Other challenges are the printer consolidation, the limiting of the number of locations, and in that process, as more and more plants have a single owner, then vendors are more inclined to sell directly to that because they know by talking to one owner they can be having discussions about multiple plants with that one owner. That's one of the things that happen at trade shows. For instance, one major consolidator, that you probably know who it is now that I said that, may have 75 or 80 plants. Those used to be 75 or 80 plants who used to send owners and production people to a trade show like this. And now they send a national technology office to come and evaluate the technology here. So those are the challenges of individual dealers. But the opportunities that I see are the fact that so many of our vendors are having some kinds of financial trouble, and I'll go through some of those in a little while, that they can't afford to have as many salespeople and technical people in the field as they used to. So this is an opportunity for well-trained dealer and technical people to be out in the field and be working with them on a contract basis with many of the vendors where they would have had full-time personnel in the past. The wide dispersion of print facilities means that it's harder to locate for a vendor, a technical salesperson, outside of the biggest cities. They used to be able to put people in second and third tier cities, not that the people who lived in the cities were second or third tier. They were very nice. I'm just talking about the sizes of those particular cities. And it used to have somebody be able to cover two or three of them if they were maybe 100 or so miles away. But now you don't have that luxury anymore. The decline of mainstream print is a real other factor, and may not seem like an opportunity, but it's the whole idea that mainstream print has to be replaced with some other kind of specialty. Wide format printing is the one that's particularly hot now. There's some really interesting things being done on different kinds of substrates, different kinds of applications, and it's like all of the applications have not even been discovered yet. So those specialty devices that will be coming on the market, in addition to selling advertising specialties and equipment like that, those are opportunities for dealers to have because, again, the vendors are so specialized they can't have a full-time sales force in the field with full coverage. They need some kind of support. Training is always an issue in terms of getting people to use products right, to be able to self-diagnose problems in production and the like. Having independent trainers in the field will be very important. They may or may not be part of the dealer channel opportunities. And also, and this one is a little out of left field, some dealers may be able to negotiate special licenses with some of the software providers, and then they could have customers then use those products as part of that dealer license. So they could be reselling the seats, in other words, for many of the specialty software that can be very, very expensive. And on one hand, some of the software providers may say, well, gee, we're leaving a lot of money on the table. But on the other hand, they could always use someone to help them manage licensing and also take responsibility for training and setup and the like. We should be more looking at not what's the state of the channel in 2013, but what's the state of the channel in 2020, and what are some of the trends that are driving those particular changes. Well, let's go back. Why do we have channels in the first place? Well, I've identified some of the benefits of dealer distribution channels is that they have an advantage that it's hard for vendors and creators of products to create internally. There's also a sense of expertise that may exist in a dealer and distribution channel that would not be seen in other places. So they fill a particular unique void in that regard. In the whole process, one of the things that I always found very, very interesting when I was teaching a business and getting to issues like channels, we'd always hear the idea that middlemen add cost to a process, where in terms of the economics of it, middlemen reduce the total cost of distribution and the movement of goods from the originator of the goods to the end user of the goods. They're there for a reason. They would not exist if they did not serve some kind of economic purpose. The question is, what kind of channels do we have in that kind of situation, and how do the nature of channels change on the basis of technological changes, the geographic dispersion of clients, and the kinds of goods that those clients are trying to produce? All of this is occurring in a marketplace that is really changing for commercial printing. Here are the long-term trends the way I see them. The first thing is that there are going to be fewer and smaller print businesses. The number of employees inside print businesses is changing for a variety of reasons. Many of us remember when there were pre-press departments in printing companies, and many of them were very substantial. Well, a lot of that work is now being done by graphic designers and inside advertising agencies and inside publishers. So with the standards that software has actually created, you can now bring many things into a printing plant without having to go through a traditional prepress department. That's one of the things that changes the nature of the print business. It also means that a lot of the supplies, a lot of the services that printers used to use and printing companies had has changed, where you didn't have concentrations of printing companies in big cities and in the closest suburbs to those cities. They are more dispersed. We're used to dispersed printing businesses because for many, many years, very, very large web offset and gravure businesses would be located in rural areas because of the cost of land and any variety of things. But this has also happened to the sheet-fed business and in some cases the digital printing business. They have moved out of the center cities because they can get work not by representing themselves directly there, but work can be sent to them on an electronic basis. So you don't have to be physically close to the customer in the same way that you were before. This has all led to a shakeout among suppliers as the tools that are used in production have changed. So we don't, much as it hurts me, we don't have the demand for graphic arts film anymore the way we used to, or the use of stat products, because instead of dragging something with a mouse, we had to actually go on a camera and enlarge it to do halftones and things like that. And, of course, printing technology has changed. So we have shrinking offset business and increasing digital business, but even those have vast subtleties to them. So mainstream printing is disappearing and being replaced by a lot of different specialties that are either related to the physical nature of the printed good, the marketplace that it's going to, or a totally different purpose that may have been seen before. It may be replacing something else, such as wide format replacing a lot of commercial screen printing that was being done for event signage and the like. This is the picture that we're looking at. You don't have to see everything on the particular slide to know that it doesn't look good. The red line is printing sales since middle of the 1990s. Back on an inflation-adjusted basis, our industry was about $140 billion per year. It has since been going down, in some cases a little jaggedly, to around $80 billion. It'll probably finish around $79 billion this year. Where did all of that go? Well, we know a lot of it went into digital media and the internet and the like. The blue line are printing industry profits. And you see how they were growing as part of the internet bubble and also whatever real estate bubble we had going on at that time. Printing profits were actually going up and were very, very strong at that time. And then they fell like the worst ski slope that you've ever been on in your entire life. Then they flattened out a little bit. In the recession, things got a little dicey, and then they've perked up a bit. But they're still nowhere near where they were in the past. Now, of course, we have fewer firms who can produce profits. But this is the general trend, because those profits are extremely important, because those are what gets recycled back into the business in terms of the investment that those businesses will have in new equipment and the like. Also, because the amount of print has declined, we've seen a decline in the number of printing establishments. So we're expecting that this will go down by about one-third in 2020 as a lot of print businesses downsize, so they move slowly to the left of the chart and get smaller. Across the top of the chart are the number of employees. And then they kind of gather a little bit more at the 1 to 9 and 10 to 19 group. And just like we've seen in graphic designers, where you used to have a graphic design studio in order to have access to the tools of graphic design, you need lots of different people in it, and now you can have one $20,000 Macintosh computer that can have you working in all different kinds of media. We're seeing that kind of thing happen in printing businesses, where you need fewer and fewer production staff, especially if you're involved in digital printing, and a lot of the output and a lot of the production aspects of it are being done on design workstations and the like. Throughout all of that kind of pessimism, we know that content is still being created. This particular chart shows the revenues of advertising agencies and different kinds of publishers. the top line are advertising agencies. This is all in spite of the fact that you hear about broadcast and cable declining, and you have a decrease in the amount of magazine circulation and decrease in the amount of magazine ad pages, where that was the function of the advertising agency, was to create some kind of communications and then go buy and negotiate prices for that. We know that that has changed as more and more print advertising agencies have been getting involved in social media, search engine optimization, and different kinds of campaigns that are involved in digital media. The bottom lines are publishing revenues. Most publishing revenues, except for books, came from advertising. So you see here the way that the newspaper industry has played out, unfortunately, and also what's happened with publications. A true tale of what's going on in media has been seen in the employment data. The blue line is employment in the commercial printing business, and you see at the top, at the beginning of the chart, it was over 800,000 people. And it's worked its way down to around 475,000. But then the red line are the combination of employees in advertising agencies and graphic design businesses. And this does not include graphic design freelancers. And they crossed sometime in early 2011. And that's an affirmation of the kind of change that's occurred in media overall as all these employees have been reallocated. When you look at the advertising agency employment and you subtract out public relations, advertising employment is flat. The only growth area in advertising employment is the 7% increase just over this last year in public relations employment, as more and more of those workers get involved in social media, Facebook campaigns, Twitter, and the like, and other formats that are used that are not buying space or time, but are actually working with creating customer allegiance through different kinds of media and designing campaigns around them. Throughout all those changes, digital printing has been growing. On the basis of the reporting of the value from the Commerce Department, digital printing is now 10% of all commercial printing volume, and I suspect that they are undercounting it, that it's probably closer to around 15%. Everything else is relatively stagnant. We see commercial flexo growing a tiny bit. We see, in fact, commercial screen growing a tiny little bit, but offset and some of the other categories declining. But digital printing has been growing, and it's growing in its market share. So the pie is decreasing overall. Digital printing's part of the pie is been increasing, and their net sales volume, except for a little hiccup that we had during the depth of the recession, is growing again. So in this process, mainstream print is decreasing. Production instead of mainstream is becoming more tactical. What I mean is that the kind of printing that's being done today, especially digital printing, has a very, very specific purpose, usually tied to a very specific program and target audience. This is why you see fewer brochures being printed for general distribution. You see more and more campaigns, more and more end-user-specific or target audience-specific products being produced. This has also led to more specialized equipment, more niche, what I call niche tactics, and different kinds of approaches to doing it. And any time you hear specialized equipment, dealers' ears should be perking up, because anyone who produces specialized equipment cannot afford to be covering the entire marketplace with salespeople in every major region. Our biggest suppliers have had some trouble coping, and I believe that as they are dealing with declining volumes of use of their especially supplies products, they are looking to restructure their sales and service coverage, moving a lot of full-time workers over to either 1099 independents or contract workers with very small organizations to cover for them. The fewer suppliers is very, very interesting. We do have a good show floor here at Print 13, but any of you who are old-timers will remember that Heidelberg and Kodak were always the ones that were up front. And the idea that you start seeing companies like Xerox up front when 30 years ago there was objection to Xerox becoming a part of NPES, the National Printing Equipment, because they're not really in the printing business. How could you have Xerox join? It shows you the kind of change that we've had in our industry. Kodak has gotten through a very difficult bankruptcy. There are channel challenges there. Heidelberg stock, one of my favorite companies to pick on, is no longer 40 euros. It's 2 euros. Prestek was taken private, and that company had stock at one time, I think, was 70, 80, or over $100, and it was sold privately, I think, for around 50 cents a share. And Xerox, which is actually doing fairly well, was $19 in 2007. It was in the 60s and 80s at the end, late 1990s. It's now about $10. So those suppliers have some kind of financial stress that require them to reorganize. They've been doing it, but it does require them to do that, and it'll be happening for a long period of time for them to do that. This slide is also something that should be a little disturbing. And it tells you that it tells you a few things about the nature of the business and why we need a new commitment to capital investment of all types. The blue line, which is the one we're going to look at the bottom line first, that is the sales per employee for commercial printing all these years. So you look at that and say, gosh, what a history of increased productivity our industry has. We love our industry. Our industry is stupendous. It's incredible. Look at it. Then you adjust it for inflation, and virtually all of that productivity increase goes away. So our, on average, productivity as measured as sales per employee goes up about $500 a year, or about 0.6%. And it's been this way for quite a long time. You see how it varies a little bit here and there, but this is the way that it is. There are really good companies who are getting $230,000, $240,000 per employee. The smaller the company goes, the less it is. So a quick printer might be about $110,000 or $120,000 just by the nature of the kind of work that they do. But this does pull away the curtain and says, you know, something really has to be done differently in the business in terms of the way we try to generate value on an economic basis. As the nature of technology has changed, and as sales has gone down, one of the things that's been injured in that process is the amount we spend on capital investment. In the past, it was just short of about five cents of every dollar, and now it seems to be headed down to 3 cents on every dollar. Now, part of that could be explained by the lack of pre-press investment, which we don't need in the same way anymore. But this goes to the heart of the production base. So you have financially constrained printers who are unable to meet the challenge of new things occurring in the marketplace, and at the time they need it most, they're unable to produce enough margin for them to spend on capital investment and revitalize their business. So where does this show up? Well, this shows up very often in the margins that they have today, because one of the worst things that you can be doing is being involved in 2013's marketplace with equipment that you bought in 1998, when the assumptions you made at that particular time were totally different about where the market was going and what was happening. So you end up trying to shoehorn whatever business you can get in some kind of production device that's not appropriate for the business. This is one of the dislocations that creates the need for consolidation, the tuck-ins, and all those other things that you hear about. As economically, we're trying to get our equipment base to match up with the actual demand in the market. Dealers play a very important role in this because they can help find places for equipment that becomes displaced in this. Now, years and years ago, one of the commitments that somebody buying new equipment would try to get out of their seller was that, don't you dare put this press in my town. You know, move it someplace else. Like, I might be in Topeka, you'd better send that to Wichita. Don't send it to Topeka. And so when in doing that, they would send things to places like Latin America or Africa or parts of Asia. And all of those economies are now buying new equipment. So it's harder to find places for used equipment to go to sign new equipment purchases. And that's one of the things that dealers can help mitigate in that particular situation. The opportunities that dealers have in this market, you know, they have their own problems, of course, but suppliers do need to cut their fixed costs. Workflows, as the business of print changes to help support other kinds of media, workflows have to be more focused on multi-channel deployment. Dealers can play a role in that by helping with the correct specifications of those. Printers are seeking new revenue sources. Dealers can be very good ideas for that. And they have new opportunities because graphic arts, designers, publishers, and others are looking for new ways to and more sophisticated things to add to their business as well, as imaging becomes more and more important. And the ways of trying to have your business stick out from anybody who can use WordPress is extremely, extremely important. So overall, commercial printing survivors are going to be healthier, I think, because of a lot of the consolidation and a lot of the weak companies just falling out of the marketplace. Smaller, more emphasis on media integration, even though it's not done by those companies specifically. A new focus on specialties and changing the kinds of offerings that they have for the marketplace. And it's going to be more broadly dispersed. So it will be less concentrated in the major cities. Smaller markets, combined with greater complexity, it's harder to run a business, leads to a total channel restructuring that we have in the business. We've already seen it from the traditional graphic arts dealers. We've seen it in the paper merchants. Now what kind of dealer channels are going to be emerging? Because this stuff isn't going away. Some of you have seen this chart before in various books like Disrupting the Future and all. This is what media is today. It used to be print, broadcast, and public relations. And now look at it. It's really strange out there. And what's really interesting to me is that the total response rate that companies get from going through some kind of communications initiative, whether it's advertising or whatever, is the same as it's always been. But in order to achieve that, you've got to spread it around all these different kinds of media. That's hard. That requires a lot of talent, a lot of insight, and especially a lot of software. So what are the challenges for 2013 to 2020? The questions that dealers need to ask, are they systems analysts for marketing services and communications logistics? We've all heard the terms marketing services. If you've read some of my books, Renewing the Printing Industry and Disrupting, I use the phrase communications logistics because I think that's a more interesting area for especially printing companies to be involved in, because printing companies are not necessarily very good at the creative side of the business. They're good at the execution side of the business. Are dealers the new capital expenditure, sales, and service infrastructure for the industry vendors? And there are some dealers and distribution personnel who actually work for many of those vendors who have gone out on their own to do these kinds of things. And very often they will grow by adding two or three people who are sophisticated in other kinds of equipment. Are dealers able to bring new ranges of specialty to these printing companies who are trying to find ways to mitigate the loss of mainstream printing? This requires some kind of insight into marketing and communications. Many dealer organizations do not have that kind of insight into marketing. We've always made fun of printers. I mean, some people made it very disparaging about how the printing industry can print all the marketing materials for the rest of the world but not be good marketers themselves, which totally denies any kind of other economic functions that they may provide. But it's that kind of paradox that we're looking for. We've always known that printers who had some kind of background in marketing, who worked in an agency, who worked for a publisher, whatever, have generally been the more profitable printing organizations. Well, similar kind of situation for dealers. Someone who's actually understands the communications markets a little bit better will probably be a much better graphic arts dealer. Is there something that dealers can offer to what I call emerging media practitioners? These are the folks who don't remember a printing industry, who think that there was always an internet, but needs some kind of experience or some kind of knowledge about communications and creating some kind of infrastructure that they have to express their particular talent or their particular tactics that they have to reaching an audience. Are there opportunities in infrastructure design and support? What that means is going into a plant, looking at their workflow, and then building out that workflow. That used to be the job of a channel that was popular in the computer industry for a long time, called a systems integrator or a value-added reseller. And that is still needed, but you need to do it with some kind of knowledge of the applications that are going on. In the past, it was, oh, yeah, you need two servers, you need this Ethernet network, you need this kind of thing. But now the technology can be so specialized, and the deployment especially can be so complex, that somebody who has good insight into this can be extremely valuable to their clients. And then, what kinds of networks of alliances? Alliances with other practitioners that clients and vendors can have are very interesting ways of coping with technological and economic change. The way we're describing this for many of the printers is that you don't want to become an ad agency. You don't want to have a graphic design business. But you want to have some kind of affiliation or alliance with good practitioners of that. And you should probably be having some kind of co-investment in technology or capabilities as part of that alliance. So while many of the dealers cannot afford those kinds of things, they can actually go about the process of making all those different parties aware of each other just as a matter of them being in the marketplace. So what kind of channels will there be by Print 17? I went on the GASC site. I don't see Print 17 yet. Gref Expo 2016 is there. I assume there will be a Print 17 because they're always 4 years apart. So when we're all standing here and I don't have a full head of hair anymore, that's gone a while. But when it's all gray and I'm here with my walker, God forbid, what kind of channels will we be talking about at that time? Don't let the marketplace lead you. Lead your particular marketplace. There's enough difference in the geographies of the U.S. and Canada and around the world that you can create interesting businesses that are unique to that specific area. So it's not something that you should be looking for guidance from associations or guidance from some other kind of industry entity or even from me. It's your own creative choice in doing those kinds of things. So with that, I would like to thank you very much and be open to any kind of questions. Well, tough. I won't answer any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. May I close it by...
I was just kidding, Dan. Okay. I will answer questions.
I have a question for you, Joe.
Okay. You should have raised your hand.
I know. Okay. If the value that the dealer gave to the manufacturer and his end users was to translate or transport value via the goods, and the future maybe the dealer can translate the value via their knowledge, what one thing will a dealer do in the future to bring his value chain effective to the future channel? What one thing?
The specific knowledge that a dealer or distributor has about a individual client and their individual client and that application is going to be what will be the primary value added that they have. One thing that many of the vendors will not have are the knowledge of who's going to be investing at a particular time, what new initiatives are they going to have. So just like the old days where people would know through the grapevine such and such a printing company was interested in opening up another facility or opening up a new department, those are the kinds of things that dealers will be more and more likely involved in, and they'll be designing the kinds of technology and their relationships and structure inside the company to help them do that.
Well, to conclude, and thank you, Joe, for being the first speaker in our roster of speakers in the second Global Channel Partners Summit here at Print 2013. Please join me in saying thanks to Dr. Joe for his presentation.
Okay, great. We'll play to the trade show. Okay, welcome everybody to our first Meet the Alliance panel of the Printiverse 2013. Everyone doesn't know, Print Media Center is a website that provides information and resources to the print and integrated marketing community. Community, and every year through the generous support of GASC and our alliance partners, we are able to put on something a little different at a trade show. We try to make it a little interactive, a little educational, a little fun, a little forward-thinking, and this year we are totally focusing on helping printers grow their business and move forward. Whether or not this is the right thing to say or not, and Pat, just let me be me for a sec. It's time we kind of move the conversation forward. If you're not on social media, this is not the place for you. We're already on social media. We need to take it to the next level. If you're not into multi-channel marketing, this is not the place for you. You can learn about it at amazing sessions here, but in this booth, we want to talk about how to use those tools for the to the best of your advantage, how to use software for the best of your advantage, how to connect to your customers in the best ways, how to use the next technologies that are coming in to be aware of them, to prepare for them, to prepare your business for the future, and certainly a heavy interest in the substrates that we do print on. With that being said, our first alliance, what we're going to do right now is basically do a trade show version of speed dating. We're going to hear from all of our alliance partners, the ones who have come today, but we do have an alliance panel every day in order to give all of our alliance members a chance to make it over, because sometimes they're certainly dealing with customers and other things that are more pressing at the moment. But with that being said, We do have one every day. You can download this really cool app called Printapply, and it will put the schedule right into your Outlook, right into your calendar from your phone. From your computer, set a little reminder, come back, but definitely you want to meet the alliance. They're awesome. So our first alliance member today is from GPA.